Special funding for the podcast of On Point is provided by Boston University School of Law, dedicated to excellence in teaching and to preparing lawyers for global challenges.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The meltdown and battle royal over the U.S. economy and financial system roll on. All eyes on Congress this week, and markets around the world responding to its debate and votes. At one level, it's about fixing this mess this time and who's left carrying the losses. At a deeper level, this may be about the American way of capitalism. This hour, On Point, a rescue package, bailout votes, and the way ahead for the American way of business. You can join the conversation. What do you want to emerge from this meltdown and response? What's the change we need from Washington, from Wall Street? Joining me now from Washington is Sudeep Reddy, reporter for The Wall Street Journal and lead writer for the journal's real-time economics blog. He was all over the hammering out of the bailout package. Sudeep Reddy, thanks very much for being with us.
Good to be with you, Tom.
And joining me in the studio is Jeffrey Frankel, professor of economics at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. He was also a member of the Council of Economic Advisors under Bill Clinton. Jeffrey Frankel, thanks so much for coming in.
Good to be back, Tom.
Sudeep, so big day for the House, maybe the Senate, if they can make it in before the Jewish holidays here. The plan that came out over the weekend, how different is it, was it, from what was first put on the table by Hank Paulson a week ago?
It is really substantially different. What we saw a week ago was 2.5 pages, three if you want to count some of the spacing with it. And what we're seeing now is a bill that's well over 100 pages, actually in legislative language, and includes a lot of details, a lot of provisions that make a significant change in what the original program was designed as. It was designed as a bare bones approach, and this has a lot of other provisions. Some of them are really just optics for politics so that lawmakers can go home and say that they got something for their constituents. Some are actually significant differences that may make a difference for homeowners and for taxpayers. But it's really remarkable to see the House debating on it today, what this may actually be in terms of a legislative response to a crisis, the fastest Congress has turned around on something like this since 9/11.
March us through, then, the key points of what's been under the gavel today in the House.
Some of the key changes, of course, the overall program is designed for the government, the Treasury Department, to come in and buy some of those toxic mortgages, the bad assets that are sitting on banks' balance sheets. The precise approach for that hasn't been determined. We're expecting that within 45 days of the actual legislation being passed. But the idea is for the government to spend what would start with $250 billion and add maybe $100 billion onto it as needed, as part of the $700 billion package, and really gives the authority to the Treasury Secretary almost immediately to go out and buy some of these mortgages up off banks' balance sheets. So still a tremendous amount of authority in the hands of one person. And there are some provisions that have added to it. It could give taxpayers an equity stake in some of these companies that participate in the program. It would limit executive compensation going forward for companies that participate. It doesn't actually deal retroactively with those, and that's kind of one of the misconceptions about this program, is that it only deals with firms and their practices from now on, and it may only include whether they fail. Then golden parachutes don't really count, and there are some other provisions for homeowners and for taxpayers in there, but a lot of the details are in the legislation are not quite what lawmakers on either side wanted, which I suppose is all part of the bargaining process.
So $250 billion in the first tranche, but it could go up. It could go way up. How much and when could eventually be dumped in here?
Ultimately, it would be $700 billion worth of authority of government spending or investment is the term they like to use. But it would be $250 billion to start, and then $100 billion based on basically approval of the president, basically a further request. And then the other $350 billion requires some other action from Congress to make that happen.
And again, in the terms of this plan, what's been under the noses of the House today and coming under the noses of the Senate as well, you said it could give an equity stake in the companies that they're rescuing, bailing out. How would that be decided? There was a loud call for sure for taxpayers to have a stake in upside if and when the market comes back.
That's right. There would be a form of what they call equity warrants in the companies that provide their debt, their bad debt into the program, that basically sell their assets back to the government. And just like most parts of this deal, of this legislation, a lot still needs to be worked out by the Treasury Department. And this, despite getting some broad principles agreed to by Congress, even though it is a 106-page bill, a lot of it deals with oversight. A lot of it deals with changes to other law to help homeowners. But some aspects like this still need some ironing out.
Sudeep Reddy in Washington, please stand by. And Jeffrey Frankel, we're joined right now as well from New York by Gretchen Morgeson, columnist for The New York Times. Gretchen, thanks very much for being with us.
Sure.
This could go up. This could go down. Everybody's watching this week. Is there something we can say about where the economy is headed either way, Gretchen? Or is it like if it's going down, does that mean, you know, do we have the Great Depression gun at our head here? If it's sailing through, does that mean we're necessarily out of the woods?
Gee, I hate to say the Great Depression. You know, those are kind of two words that are so iconic, no one wants to utter them.
They're all over the place these days.
I guess, but, you know, we have a decline in the stock market and some figures this morning, you know, on income that are kind of troubling. But the fact is that the credit markets are still very, very frozen. And what that means is that the grease that sort of spins the wheels of commerce really is not there. And that could, in fact, tip the country into a recession. So that's the concern. That's obviously why we need this bailout package and why it was so urgent and expressed as an urgent matter by the Treasury Secretary, because we really need to get those markets rolling again. But again, it is still, they're still kind of locked up, and that's troubling.
Jeffrey Frankel, do you see the U.S. economy, one way or another, with or without, as a different economy on the other side of this? Does business as usual somehow sneak through this and go on or not?
Well, one question is the short-term impact. I mean, to comment on your previous question, I think we're headed into a recession no matter what. I mean, one can never be confident of that, but there's so many negative indicators. And judging by employment and some other indicators, we've been in a recession since January, even though GDP has not yet turned down.
And you're with the NBER that calls whether we're in a recession or
that's
not.
That's right. And the reason, I mean, without, you know, giving away anything confidential, the fact that indicators have pointed different directions, that GDP has still been positive is the reason we haven't. I think that this, if this effort that began with the Treasury Secretary and then has been continued in negotiations for the last week, if it had not, I'm guessing now that it's going to succeed, if it had not gone through, that we really would be looking at very serious consequences. As it is, I think this is enough. This will go a long way towards hopefully stopping the or at least easing the plunge that had been the financial crisis. But that leaves a longer-term issue, which is, you know, there's a lot of dangers out there for the medium term. And then there's all these longer-term issues, which I think your question hinted at. Is this going to require a fundamental rethinking of the free market, essentially free market model that the United States and Britain have followed in with respect to financial markets? And it's a very interesting big question.
Of course, we're having this conversation before the vote is actually taken. So this could go one way or the other. Optimism as people came into Congress today, but who knows how it turns out. Gretchen Morgeson, we kind of count on you as a sentinel for the ordinary guy and gal as you watch Wall Street. Do you see this rescue package before Congress as fair?
Well, I realize it's a huge question
and hard to answer, but yet the bottom line matters on that.
It surely does. To the degree that the American taxpayer are being asked to fork over $700 billion to rescue banks from their reckless behavior in the sort of boom that began with mortgage lending, it is deeply unfair. And that is, I think, something that really you can't underestimate how that will resonate with people. You know, many Americans were minding their P's and Q's, trying not to get into too great a debt exposure and, you know, struggling, as it were. Two-income families are required to pay the bills. And so now to be asked to sort of bail out these, you know, very freewheeling and immensely highly remunerated people who kind of broke the system down, it's galling.
Sudeep Reddy at the Wall Street Journal, do you have the sense that one way or another that era will be gone, or that Wall Street is going to want to tiptoe back to it somehow? Gretchen Morgenson says at some fundamental level it's deeply unfair. The only kind of compensation for that, you would think, is if we come out the other side with a different, less exploitable system. Does it look like we will, or we'll have to?
Well, Tom, of course, regulation goes through cycles, and this will certainly be the beginning of one cycle. What lawmakers are facing right now is taking a vote back to their people, and the ones who are voting for it because they believe it's in the best interests of the economy and the country and their own constituents are going to be going home and making the argument that if I did not make this vote, then the economy might have been, probably would have been worse off because of it. That's a really hard thing for anybody to see on the other side as a result when you can't actually see the crisis at hand, since it's obviously difficult to visualize what credit markets are doing. Then that's the problem that they're taking back, and the economy is not going to get better simply because of this. It may prevent it from getting worse. So now, as a result, you're going to be bringing a new Congress in that almost wants payback in a way for having been held hostage and being forced to make this decision at a time like this over the course of less than 2 weeks right before an election. And their payback will be in the form of regulation, and probably much harsher regulation that certainly will at least play out over the course of a decade before we really see the bottom end of it.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking today about the rescue package Congress is taking on this week and the meaning of a thumbs-up or thumbs-down vote, the view of the U.S. economy ahead, on the other side eventually of this crisis. Gretchen Morgenson, columnist for The New York Times, is with us. Sudeep Reddy with The Wall Street Journal. He's been covering the whole hammering out, tough hammering out, of the bailout package before Congress this week. Jeffrey Frankel is here, professor of capital formation and growth at Harvard's Kennedy School. Here's Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, yesterday saying this bailout bill signaled the end of high times on Wall Street.
Working in a bipartisan way, we sent a message to Wall Street. The party is over. The era of golden parachutes for high-flying Wall Street operators is over. No longer will the U.S. taxpayer bail out the recklessness of Wall Street.
Well, maybe, but that's exactly what's on the table this week. On Sunday morning, after a long night of talk, Secretary of the Treasury Henry Paulson, told reporters legislators had agreed upon a plan that he said would be effective both on Wall Street and on Main Street.
We've been working very hard on this, and we've made great progress toward a deal which will work and will be effective in the marketplace and, you know, effective for all Americans.
Gretchen Morgenson, lots of outrage last week and among voters. At the same time, concerned that if this all collapses, everybody could really be hurt. Do you see theater, eyewash, or real responses on fronts that people have cared about, executive compensation, on taxpayers having a real stake in the upside if the market turns around, maybe help for not just the fat cats on Wall Street, but on mortgage holders? What do you make of the shape of the final package on the table, Gretchen?
Well, I think that the idea that this is the end, quote, of an era of golden parachutes and high compensation is a little bit too premature. Really, the language in this, as far as I can tell, is pretty weak and does not really do anything new about clawback provisions, which help companies to get back executive pay that was already, put out there. Mm-hmm. If it was found to have been based on improper accounting or mm-hmm. losses or whatever. I mean, these companies are able to do that now. So just, kind of adding this idea of a clawback provision does not really do too much. I think that the thing that you alluded to, Tom, earlier is the crucial thing here, and that is trust. Does this package help us get back to the point where we can trust our leaders to be doing the same, to doing the right thing for the taxpayers? And I think that's an open question. I do believe it had to be done, yes, and something had to be done, but I think that the way this was initially promoted was a disaster. It was so sort of trust me mm-hmm. elements about it. I think that there's just a real need for the leadership to stand up and start showing Americans that they do have what it takes to be trusted again.
Jeffrey Frankel, trust is at the heart of the American system. Confidence on the one hand, there's going to be credit out there, confidence that the great leeway and financial flows that we allow to go in the free market are going to ultimately work for the common good. How do you see the formula being different when the dust settles here? How different does it have to be to reestablish that trust?
Well, two kinds of trust. Trust within the marketplace, and one way of describing the entire financial crisis we've been in for the last year is a disappearance of trust in the marketplace. Trust of banks in each other, for example.
Right.
A thorough disappearance of trust. Then there's a question of trust in government, and I think many of us have lost faith in our government for many reasons, and I think, government has failed over the last 7 years, and in terms of bipartisan gridlock, it's been going on much longer than that, and some of these failures do have to do with the origins of this crisis. Having said that, I would like to go on record as saying that I think this is a very positive development, what has happened.
The whole meltdown, the package
response? No, of course not.
What?
No, that's a disaster. Mm-hmm. But the government response, and I agree with Sid Debretti that having responded in 1 week, Washington, it may sound like chaos, but actually, I've read through the 110 pages. But I've leafed through it and looked at the different provisions, and I think in some ways this is our government working quite well. Which, by the way, they also did in January when they within a week responded to an initial round of the crisis by voting the fiscal stimulus package in a bipartisan way for the first time, really. The White House giving up things that it had traditionally wanted and compromising with the Democrats.
Working quite well for whom?
Well, I think the bill that the negotiators produced yesterday, Sunday, that is much superior to the bill that the Treasury proposed a week ago Monday, which I was on record as opposed to. And lots of people had lots of objections. And in my
view, good for saving Wall Street's bacon, for getting everything back in balance here. Is that clear yet?
Well, nothing's clear. It certainly won't clear. It's not clear that it definitely will work. It's far from clear that this isn't be enough to avert a recession. But it's there's a lot of very specific features in the bill which were the result of listening to critics and compromising politically. And I think they came out pretty well. You want me to run through a few,
yes,
a few of
what
the
do you
features?
Like?
There was no oversight at all on Monday, and that was mm-hmm. that just was a non-starter. And some people say that Paulson did that deliberately and was as a negotiating tactic. But if so, I think it was a mistake because mm-hmm. it put lots of people off. Well, the oversight is in there. The very important point is that in the initial side, it was just socializing the losses. And there was no provision for the taxpayer sharing on the upside. Well, now there's a number of provisions for that. And the result is it's quite possible that we will certainly won't cost the taxpayer the full $700 billion. We may make back all of it. People tend to forget that the Mexican bailout, which was so unpopular at the time, the Treasury actually made a profit on that. And same thing mm-hmm. with the Chrysler bailout, which I actually think was a mistake. But the taxpayer did make a profit on that. And it's now possible, unlike with the proposal a week ago, that will happen. The limits on executive compensation, I think, actually were there, which is a plus. Certainly a plus politically, but also they're pretty well crafted and doing it in slices. And there's even some very technical things like about having to do with exchange stabilization fund that shows that they worked on this very carefully. So I actually think that it's rare, but we could I would say even be proud of the lawmakers on both sides who managed to negotiate this in a week of very intense pressure.
Gold star or at least silver, we'll see where it ends up. A lot of questions from our listeners. Sarah in Groton, Massachusetts, you're on the air. Sarah, what's your question?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I read this morning that they had dropped the provision that would allow bankruptcy judges to renegotiate the terms of mortgages.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to know what it's been replaced with that will allow as many as people as possible to stay in their homes. What's the new mortgage piece that replaces that provision?
Sudeep Reddy, can you respond?
That provision has been dropped. A lot of Democrats, of course, wanted it to give judges some additional authority to deal with this issue. And what has been replaced in large part is a commitment from Treasury to deal with this, to actually fix the problem of people who are stuck with mortgages that they can't afford is a really complicated one. One way that they could have approached this problem in terms of bailing out the financial system, in theory, is to go and actually help the people who have those homes and are in trouble right now. But obviously that takes a long time, months if not years, to go through and figure out on a case-by-case basis what people are dealing with. And now you're looking at the Treasury Department owning all of these, a large share of these bad securities. And then they've all been sliced and diced into securities and sent around the world, and actually taking these apart and figuring out which pieces the Treasury owns and how to trace those back and what authority they have to deal with home mortgages that are in trouble is a very good question. This
is there anything in there, as Congress is all over this, that would give if the government's going to own this, if they would own it, will they have more power to prevent home foreclosures somehow? Is that in the deal or not?
It is not explicitly in the deal the way Democrats would have wanted it to have an immediate impact. There is some authority to potentially address this, which is what a lot of this bill is direction and authority to potentially address some of these problems.
Lots of potentials in here. Makes it hard to judge. Sherry in Des Moines, Iowa, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I heard over the weekend that I believe it was the House GOP who had suggested that perhaps some capital gains tax reductions and other such trickle-down breaks should be put in this. And it really was so frustrating that the people who have made so much money are being taxed so little, and now the taxpayers, like just middle-class Americans like me, are forking over $700 billion, and then the people who got us into this mess are, you know, going to get another tax break out of it.
Yeah.
And I just don't understand this.
Sherry, let us pick it up. Gretchen Morgenson, that was floated. Cut the capital gains tax as a way of addressing the crisis as a Republican proposal. What was the logic of that, and where does it stand, Gretchen?
Well, the logic of it is that when you cut taxes, people have more money left to spend, get the economy going. But as your listener points out, it does have this problem with it, which is this perception that, again, it is throwing a bone or even rewarding some of the very people who got us into this mess. And so I think from that standpoint, it's going to have problems. I don't know if it's really close to any kind of fruition. I'm not in the Washington scene, so it's hard for me to tell that. But I do think that the objections that your listener just presented would be fairly common.
Jeffrey Frankel, you're shaking your head. You don't think that's going to happen?
No, I mean, it's not in the draft legislation that's been produced now, mm-hmm. and I don't think so. I mean, it's irrelevant. You can argue the pros and benefits of, and I'm opposed to further reductions in capital gains tax. I don't think the Treasury can afford the revenue, but it's not directly relevant. And one of the reasons why I think this is a good bill is that some of the more iffy proposals that came from both sides, the right and the left, both sides mm-hmm. of the aisle, are not in there, and that's one of them.
Let's go to Stuart in Framingham, Massachusetts. Stuart, you're on the air.
Hey, how are you?
Well,
I guess I don't want it to get to be a flight of fancy here. My question is, since fundamental issues aren't being addressed, they say, and of course housing prices are the big one, my concern is that we talk a lot about things being too big to fail, mm-hmm. so we allow other banks to purchase them. My question is Wall Street too big, and is there a way to break up Wall Street? Years ago, I heard about some guys in San Francisco who were laughed out of town because they wanted to build a market. Foreign markets are not really that competitive, but looking better.
Yeah, so is there a way to get away from the held hostage to giants too big to fail dynamic? Gretchen, what do you say to that?
Not at the moment. In fact, I think that one of the elements of this bailout that's kind of the elephant in the room is what the impact of this unregulated credit default swap market mm-hmm. has on this entire problem. And that is we have had our system has become so interrelated and so linked. It's really a web of contracts and arrangements that have been struck between banks, brokerage firms, institutions, pension funds, etc., that the domino effect of one, the knock-on effect of one failure can really have a major impact. And that is why we are having this bailout put into place. But it by no means you know, eliminates the problem of future potential, failures or distressed companies.
Sudeep, I hear you there.
Yeah, one of the amazing things about this this episode we've been going through over the last few weeks, and really for the last year, is that we've had the too big to fail problem and these firms going down and needing government help perhaps to keep them afloat. And now to try to deal with this, we have banks going in and buying other giant banks and creating enormous banks that are then going to be perhaps
even bigger.
Way too big to fail. Mm-hmm. And what happens if some of them start tumbling? The idea that Wachovia would be the biggest one. Certainly, they had some bad acquisitions that created a lot of problems for them.
Citigroup taking over there today.
Exactly. And so to now have these enormous banks that are then going to be participating in this debate over regulation. And of course, when you have banks that are this large, then participating in the debate with Congress, and obviously these are contributors to Democrats and Republicans. And then how is that debate supposed to go forward if the banks are so large that they are exerting so much so much influence over the financial system?
Too big to fail, too big to ignore, maybe too big to get Congress to break up if they needed to. Let's go to ML in Boston. ML, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Well, first of all, I am outraged by the bailout. I think it amounts to blackmail. This morning I was describing it to my 22-year-old son as socialism for the benefit of the wealthy. Now, let me, say that we here are a family of five with three young adults, 20, 22, and 24. The value of our house has risen because of the real estate speculation that has been made possible by the banking system.
Yep.
And because the value of our house has been rising, we have been forced in 11 years in order to cover medical, dental, college expenses for a family of five in the Boston area, we have been forced to go from a $270,000 mortgage to a $530,000.
So you borrowed against that. Now you're up against the wall. There's no bailout here for you.
Because, as I say, when the college, is sending you the package, they don't care that you don't have the cash. The answer was always you have assets.
ML, our time is short before the break, but we've got that snapshot, and it's a potent one, repeated in too many quarters. Gretchen Morgenson, you hear ML's family's circumstances. You see how she looks at this as a bailout, blackmail, socialism for the wealthy, she says. What do you say in response, Gretchen?
Well, there is this element of socializing losses while the gains were privatized and handed over to the people who got us into the mess, and that's really the problem here. But again, we're in this really tough problem where we have to do something, or the wheels of commerce are going to come to a stop. So I sympathize completely with her situation, and it's an awful one to be in.
But we've got 30 seconds before we have to let you go, Gretchen. Do you see something else emerging here than where we've been for the last 10, 20, 30 years?
Well, unfortunately, I think it's going to take some time. I think everyone wants a quick fix, and that is just not going to happen. This is the start. This is the beginning. I think that leaders have to start to work back to earn our trust. And, if we can work out some of these mortgages so that the overhang of declining home prices doesn't hurt everyone, that's a good thing. But it's going to take a long time to fix. It's not going to happen overnight.
No magic bullet at all. Gretchen Morgenson with the New York Times. You're always great. Thank you very much for being with
Thank
us today.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the rescue package Congress is taking on this week, the meaning of a thumbs-up or thumbs-down vote in the way ahead for the U.S. financial system and U.S. economy. Sudeep Reddy is with us, reporter for The Wall Street Journal, who's been following every twist and turn in this very tough path. Jeffrey Frankel is here, professor of capital formation and growth at Harvard's Kennedy School, author of American Economic Policy in the 1990s. Former member of the Council of Economic Advisors. President Bush up early this morning and on the air trying to comfort markets and get Congress to push this thing through.
I'm confident that this rescue plan, along with other measures taken by the Treasury Department and the Federal Reserve, will begin to restore strength and stability to America's financial system and overall economy. And I'm confident that in the long run, America will overcome these challenges and remain the most dynamic and productive economy in the world.
The president's confident. Are you? Jeffrey Frankel, what about regulation coming out of this? Now, this document on the table this week, up or down, it's not the regulation that presumably will change down the road. But does this even set a course? Does it set a direction? Is it plain what will have to happen, what might happen?
Well, that's an unanswered question. That what kind of regulatory changes? I'm sure there will be some. We don't yet know. But let me emphasize that it's already clear that the structure of our financial system will change, has already changed. The financial sector has mm-hmm. shrunk, will shrink further. We've seen the disappearance of many of the famous names, Lehman, Bear Stearns, Wachovia, mm-hmm. many others. As a share of corporate profits, the financial sector is going to be way down. And as a share of GDP, it's going to be way down.
Are these good things or bad things?
I think it had gotten too big. I think, you know, some people thought that maybe that was the case before. Now we know for sure that that mm-hmm. was the case before. A lot of this was just sort of generating profits on froth and transactions like the famous credit default swaps mm-hmm. and collateralized debt CDOs, et cetera, that probably shouldn't have taken place. There was a question before whether this might mean that just Wall Street shrinks and it moves offshore, it moves to other countries. Mm. That's not so clear. I mean, London is the financial center that is the rival for New York in terms mm-hmm. of size and importance. The two are by far largest in the world, and London is hurting equally from this.
So credit default swaps, for example, where the stuff that's all been all the debt that's been all sliced and diced and traded around, and then insurance on what gets traded around. Warren Buffett calls it weapons of, you know, mass financial destruction. Do those get regulated, or does the market take care of that? Are we finished with the era where we assume that because it all blew up, the market will take care of it?
Well, I agree with all that. I agree with you, with Warren Buffett, and maybe the implication of the question. I don't think those should have existed. I mean, one can say that because the market produced them, they must serve a purpose. But I was wondering about that at the time, and now it's clear. Credit default swaps, the whole model where the person who originates the loan and makes a bet on the creditworthiness of either a homeowner or another company, it's equal, the same, is not the person who ends up holding it. It's someone far away ends up holding it. I think that shouldn't have happened. It may, and I would predict that will maybe disappear or at least sharply diminish. It might happen on its own because through the marketplace, or it might need some help through regulation. I'm not sure.
Sudeep Reddy, do you feel the smell in Washington, the readiness to, you know, dive right in there, get that kind of regulation going here after the era we've been through and its end?
There's no question that they're going to be focusing on that. It will most likely be Democratic leadership in Congress when we come back in January, and Democrats are itching for a fight here. One of the reasons they were in some ways eager to let this go through is because they were turning around and saying, "Well, this problem was not of our making," and so blame the Bush administration, blame Republicans for creating the problem. And then in some ways, and Barney Frank, the chairman of the House Financial Services Committee, has been saying this throughout the last 2 weeks. That this was a failure of regulation and the lack of regulation, and so he will be stepping up. And one of the issues that had been thrown around in this debate over the last week on the legislative language was even whether there should be a requirement to have legislation in place by the end of March, within 3 months of Congress coming back, to deal with this overall regulatory regime. Obviously, that's too soon, and it is not part of this package, because you do need more time to figure that out. But by March, we will still be cleaning up this financial crisis and obviously dealing with the $700 billion program. But even the much broader landscape for the financial system still will not be clear. We see banks every other day going down, some very large banks, and it's going to be a while before we have true confidence that insurance systems for the credit default swaps, insurance for the insurance, is set up properly, and that more shock absorbers are in the system. And a lot of the regulators are working on that now, but Congress is not going to be as fast in legislating regulation as it has in doling out $700 billion.
Jeffrey Frankel, it's not clear how the markets are going to respond to this big package. They were racing to get it in before Asian markets opened on their Monday morning. It was Sunday in the U.S., and they didn't do so well. Is it possible that the gun kind of stays to the country's head in the months ahead, and with the markets, the financial industry around the world saying, or on Wall Street saying, you regulate and down we go? It's got to be the Wild West, wide open, or we all go over the cliff.
Well, I'm certainly not going to predict that this is the end of the financial crisis, because so many other people have made statements like that so many times before and it's been proven wrong. But I think this is sort of our best shot at it, maybe our last shot at it. I don't know.
Sudeep, I mean, what about that? The market's not joyously bouncing up here. So what takes away the dynamic of don't mess with us too much, or the whole economy goes down?
Well, one of the dynamics you're seeing right now is this is a program that certainly that was cleared in about 10 days from start to finish, assuming it does pass this week. Beyond that, though, the economy is still in some deeper trouble, and so you might be preventing the flu from becoming pneumonia, but it's still a big problem, and it's a sick patient, and how to recover from that is a broader issue, and markets are probably responding in part to the fact that you have banks on both sides of the Atlantic going down, or at least having to be rescued before they entirely collapse, and that is a big fear, because how many more of these banks are we supposed to see decline before we actually see the government step in, the Treasury Department step in, and start dealing with what is one of the key sources of this problem? And we're looking at probably weeks. The Treasury technically has authority immediately after this passes and the president signs it to go out and start buying mortgages. But you can't imagine that they'd be able to do any of that before a few days to even get started. And then it's setting up an auction process if they want to buy it, a reverse auction. So a few more weeks of that. And it can $350 billion can be allotted in a matter of days, but it still takes some work to spend it.
Let's go to Joe in Fort Dodge, Iowa. Hi, Joe. You're on the air.
Hello, Tom. Thanks for taking the call, and I just think this is one of the best programs anywhere.
Well, thank you so much.
I'm just thinking there's an easy solution for this. Why don't we just nationalize the oil industry? Then we give all the Americans all the profits from the oil industry as well as all the bad debt from the banking industry. Let's do that.
Hey, what the heck? While we're into socialism for the rich, let's have spin it both ways. What, are you serious, Joe?
Tom, would you have been serious 2 weeks ago asking the American people for $700 billion?
No, it wouldn't have occurred to me. But here we are. You're right about that.
And, this didn't happen overnight. You know, this is 30 years of Reaganomics as far as I'm concerned. And, why not let the people share in the profits as well as take the hits?
Joe, thanks for your call. Jeffrey Frankel, I mean, what I like about this question is it acknowledges the scale of what's going on here. And says, hey, while we're throwing around major chunks of national wealth, let's think about how this pie gets divvied up. If we're going to, stick the fork in and divvy a bunch to bail out Wall Street, what about some restructuring of the way it gets passed around? Is that, you're kind of, I don't know, part of the system in a way, Jeffrey, so I don't know how that looks to you, but... Is that crazy? Is that the kind of time we're in? Should we be having that kind of national conversation?
Well, I hope I'm not part of the system. I
mean, well, you tell us if we're in recession or not, at least.
Oh,
to the extent that.
I see. But let me. I mean, I was very critical of the initial package, and of course, the bailout is awful. I want to be clear of that, and the public has a right to be shocked at it. I just think it's better than what they came out with a week ago, and it's better than the alternative of letting the country go into recession. And the answer, some time back ago, your caller ML said, is socialism for the benefit of the wealthy, and she's sort of outraged by that, and I sympathize completely. But that's basically the system that we've certainly the system we've been at in for the last 7 years and possibly longer. So I agree with the current caller in that sense.
Mean it can't change. Is this the moment? If we're riding the scales a little bit here, do we need to be laying some thumbs on here and there?
So I mean the idea. I did a double take, just as I suppose you did at hearing and nationalize the oil industry. What does that have to do with it? And it's shocking. But then the caller is quite right. I mean, is it any more shocking than what we've just had? But thinking through it, I think that the right answer is not socialism, and the right answer is not completely unfettered capitalism with no regulation whatsoever. The right answer is an intermediate degree of regulation. It should be smart regulation rather than dumb regulation. In my view, what we've had for the last 7 years, I don't know about socialism isn't the right word, but we've had big expansion of the size of the government, contrary to the rhetoric of the administration, and the benefits have gone predominantly to the wealthy and none to lower income workers and not much to the middle class. So in that sense, this is nothing new, and we're just facing up to the price of some of this. No, I don't think that the American public, I mean, some people may say the reaction to this is it just shows that capitalism doesn't work and we should, you know, start nationalizing things. But I think that's a very small fraction of the American public believes that, and I don't believe it myself. So I don't think we're ready, contrary to the wishful thinking of a few people on the left, for a massive swing in the direction of socialism or expansion in the other sectors of the economy that the government owns.
And yet, Sudeep, this price tag is being, you know, potentially right on the backs of a whole lot of people who didn't take place in the gilded party that just went on. Do you sense in Congress a readiness, a conversation about sort of moving the fulcrum, you know, of government's hand in the economy to shift how the fruits of our economy come down? If the people are going to be asked to bail out Wall Street this time, do you foresee, or does it all depend on, I don't know, the vote on November 4th, some kind of fundamental shift in how we balance the rewards of this country's economy?
Absolutely, Tom. If you if the Democrats can get through the next 5 weeks or so and get to the election and not take too much heat for backing this Bush administration proposal for the $700 billion bailout, which they may be able to pull off, then this is probably a political gift to them in a way. It's obviously not a $700 billion loss to the government. It may be on the order of $100 billion, a little more, a little less perhaps, so that nobody really knows how much. But this will be the argument for the next 2 years of Congress, especially on the House floor. You will have every Democratic lawmaker who wants a new program enacted, a new social program, any other kind of government spending, to say, if we can spend $700 billion for Wall Street, why can't we do it for schools, for lower taxes for the middle class, for homeowners, for you name it, and the list will go on and on and on, and it will be an argument that will be very, very difficult to argue against, because you've really have a middle class that didn't really make gains throughout this decade. And so next year will be there will be a lot of pressure to figure out how the folks who got elected in will help the people who brought them in. And they're going to, of course, be doing it when the government is in an even worse fiscal position, not necessarily because of this, because it'll take a longer time period to sort out how much this program costs ultimately, but just because a slower economy means lower tax revenue. And there are obviously all sorts of other expenses on the balance sheet with the war and other spending right now that need to be dealt with. But this is certainly going to give more impetus rather than less to expand the size of government and expand it for the benefit of people who didn't get the help this time.
Of course, if the cupboard is bare after the $700 billion go, that doesn't make it easy. Let's go to Kelly in Burlington, Vermont. Kelly, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi. I'm curious. My question actually is very relevant to the conversation that was just taking place. I'm wondering what your experts think of the outcome of the November election and the effect that that would have on sort of the long-term climate on Wall Street.
And do you mean at the presidential level, Kelly, the presidential level or Congress?
Presidential level.
Mm-hmm. Let's go straight to it. Thanks for that, Jeffrey Frankel. McCain or Obama and the position we're in? Okay.
I mean, I have to say, to me, John McCain looked rather foolish last week when he suspended his campaign, rushed back to Washington, insisted on a meeting at the White House, which the White House gave him, in which, in the course of the meeting, he had nothing to say, and he came out apparently saying that he thought progress had been made, and apparently unaware that they basically had reached an agreement before, and that whether he was the cause of it or not, I don't know, as some of the Democrats are charging, but that they didn't have an agreement coming out of it.
And what about his policy instincts looking forward from the mess we're in now?
I don't know what his policy instincts are. To me, he looks reckless. And I don't know. I mean, he's taken some good positions on lots of things and been brave about them over time. He's not doing that now, as far as I can tell, as part of the campaign. To me, he looks reckless. But, you know, I'm a Democrat.
Sudeep Reddy, the way the country digs out of this, from your position watching it in Washington, how big a difference do you think it makes? It's likely to be a Democratic majority in Congress in any case, maybe a bigger one. But how big a difference does it matter who's in the White House?
It does make some difference because it all goes to what kind of momentum they're going to bring into it. Professor Frankel's point was right on in that John McCain probably would have been better off not standing in the way, letting this pass quickly, and hoping something else happens over the next 4 weeks that allows him to play to his strengths a little bit more, because obviously 2 weeks ago, the credit crisis and this particular issue wasn't on the minds of about 98% of lawmakers.
But only a little difference going forward? It doesn't matter if there's a Republican veto pen in the White House let's say a Democrat saying, come on, let's reform? That looks from a distance like it could make a big difference.
It will make a significant difference in the differences between them. But if you have a fully Democratic House and Senate pushing legislation, then I don't think you're going to have John McCain, who is trying to play as a maverick and stand up for the people. There's a lot more populism in his tone right now, really standing in the way. That it will be a lot, even with Senator Obama, some of his positions aren't crystal clear in terms of how they align with the Democratic leadership in the House and the Senate. And so I'm not sure he's going to be as much left-wing player as some people are expecting.
Well, whatever emerges, it looks like a tough and long road ahead on the economy. Grateful to each of you for your insights on today. Sudeep Reddy with The Wall Street Journal in Washington. Wonderful to have you with us. Thanks for taking the time, Sudeep.
Thank you, Tom.
And Jeffrey Frankel of Harvard's Kennedy School, author of American Economic Policy in the 1990s. Remember those. Professor Frankel, thanks very much for being here.
Thank you, Tom.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation and download the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.